This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to look at the truth about the most influential and the most bloody conflict in all of human history, World War II. A special broadcast, especially at a time when we are losing so many members of the greatest generation who fought for our freedom and fought to save the world in World War II. A terribly appropriate time to remember the real lessons of that conflict and to clear away some of the lies, some of the mistakes, and some of the myths about World War II in this very special broadcast. And one of those myths involves the idea that the first stages of the war were cheap and easy for the Germans. They were not. The Germans initiated a new style of warfare called Blitzkrieg, lightning war, which meant a coordinated attack by tanks, a kind of a strategy that had been devised by a brilliant German general named Heinz Guderian, who actually wrote a book in 1937 that didn't get enough study in the West. It was a book called Achtung Panzer, meaning attention, panther. And the panther people, Zionism means simply, and you can look it up in the dictionary, a belief in the necessity for a Jewish homeland, for a rebuilt land of Israel in the site of the ancient land of Israel. And one of the slogans of the early leaders of the Zionist movement, who gathered for the first time, and they knew that they were making history, when they met in 1897 in Basel, Switzerland, the world's first Zionist conference, they knew they were making history. And part of their thinking was a people, a land without a people, for a people without a land. Because there was a recognition that Palestine, a province of the Turkish Empire at the time, was remote, it was ignored, it was underpopulated, it was malaria-ridden, it was terribly, terribly poor. The town of Jerusalem was really only a town. It had fallen in population all the way down to just 15,000 people in 1844. And yes, it was a Jewish majority, but it was a very, very small place and a very out-of-the-way place. And there was a feeling that somehow this land was waiting to be redeemed. But how do you redeem it? I mean, one of the things that should be obvious to anybody who knows something about, oh, the history of Jewish people in the 19th century, was there was no such thing as a Jewish army. There was no such thing as Jewish armed force at all. Jewish people were, by and large, the overwhelming majority of Jewish people in the late years of the 1800s were poor, they were destitute, they lived in Poland, they lived in Russia, they were oppressed, they had no rights, they were desperately trying to immigrate to America, and more than 2 million of them came to the United States between 1880 and 1920. There was really no ability for people to go into the Middle East and into this area that was, after all, run by Turkey, and to steal people's land. But that also wasn't the plan. Part of the plan of the Zionist movement is defined by Theodor Herzl until he died, tragically, at the age of only 44 in 1904, long before he could see his dream realized of a reborn Jewish state. Part of his plan was simply to buy land. And the emphasis was on buying land that was largely uncultivated, particularly swampy, cheap land. And a great deal of the biblical land of Israel was covered in mosquito-infested malarial swamps. And a lot of the early Zionists felt that where they could drain the swamps and actually use this land to build farms and settlements and collective farms and to grow things. They particularly focused on land that was uninhabited. John Hope Simpson, who was a British official who arrived in Palestine in May of 1930, for instance, said the Jews paid high prices for the land. And in addition, they paid to certain of the occupants of those lands a considerable amount of money, which they were not legally bound to pay. And in fact, the idea that Jews ran the Arabs off their land, drove the Arabs off their land, is rebutted by the King of Jordan, what was called Transjordan at the time, the same King of Jordan who later declared war on the new state of Israel. But his name was King Abdullah. He was the grandfather of King Hussein, the great-grandfather of the current King Abdullah. And he wrote in his memoirs, "It is made quite clear to all, both by the map drawn up by the Simpson Commission and by another compiled by the Peel Commission, that the Arabs are as prodigal in selling their land as they are in useless wailing and weeping. The truth of the matter is Jews were paying exorbitant prices to wealthy absentee landowners, people who lived in Lebanon or Iraq or Egypt and owned some of these big tracts of land in the Turkish province of Palestine, and they were paying them between $1,000 and $1,100 per acre. And that was for mostly semi-arid land. In the same year, rich black soil in Iowa was selling for about $110 per acre. Now, the Turks welcomed, initially, all of this interest in their all-but-forgotten province of Palestine, and so, too, initially, did many of the local Arabs. Because the ultimate proof that this wasn't a question of Jews coming in and driving Arabs out is looking at the population figures. Because the Turks didn't do a lot right, but one of the things that they did do is they kept pretty good census records. And if you look at what happened between World War I, when the Turks were driven out by the British, we'll get to that, and World War II, the Jewish population in that time period of Palestine, the Jewish population increased by 470,000, Jews immigrating from all over the world. But during that same time period, the non-Jewish population rose by even more, by 588,000. In other words, as everyone reported at the time, and there are tons of sources of this, Arab sources as well, there were lots of Arabs from surrounding countries, from Syria, from Egypt, from Iraq, from Lebanon, and from Transjordan, who rushed in to Palestine because of the new economic activity and the improved living conditions that were made possible by the Jewish settlement. Far from suffering because Jews were settling the land and draining the swamps and building hospitals, the truth of the matter is that all of that economic activity actually improved health statistics, not only for the Jews who were moving in, but for the Muslims. For instance, the Muslim infant mortality rate was cut in half between 1925 and 1945, the same time period when there were literally hundreds of thousands of Jews moving in. Life expectancy was 37 years in 1926. By 1943, less than 20 years later, it had gone up from 37 years to 49 years. Improved health conditions, improved economic conditions. And that was a dramatic part of the story. One of the things that made the Zionist dream come true was the recognition that World War I represented an opportunity. Turkey fought in World War I. It fought on the side of the Germans, which looked very much to be a losing side. And some of the Jewish settlers in Palestine realized they had an opportunity to get in on the winning side, the British side. And they volunteered to serve in a Jewish legion with the British. And also they organized an interesting military outfit with the colorful name of the Zion Mule Corps. Now, if that's not colorful enough, the Zion Mule Corps was organized by a one-armed warrior named Joseph Trumpeldor. He had been a Jewish veteran of the Russian army who lost his arm fighting against the Japanese in 1905. And now he had the idea to help organize the Zion Mule Corps, volunteers for the British fighting against the Turks in World War I. And they did extremely well. In fact, they were commended by the Allied commander-in-chief, who wrote to one of the commanders of the Zion Mule Corps, "The men have done extremely well, working their mules calmly under heavy shell and rifle fire, and thus showing a more difficult type of bravery than the men in the front line who had the excitement of combat to keep them going." So handling the mules, fighting for the British, helped to lead to a favorable dispensation toward the whole Zionist enterprise by the British government. This special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show.
Washington Policy Center, WPC, is Washington State's champion for free market reforms and is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. It's led the effort against state and local income taxes. Its research and policy analysis are relied on by lawmakers, media, and citizen activists for accuracy, fresh perspective, and to expose the political manipulation of data. Our state needs WPC more than ever, and we need you to be part of it. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook, and it comes to you together with an MP3 player so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audiobook and hardcover book bundle.
Introducing the all-new My Slippers from MyPillow. 2 years in development. Designed to wear indoor, outdoor, all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. And made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, you can get 50% off the new My Slippers. They're super comfortable, and you'll like them so much you'll want to get pairs of them for the entire family. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener's square and use promo code MEDVED. That's promo code MEDVED, M-E-D-V-E-D. You'll also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, like the Giza Dream bed sheets, the mattress topper, and towel sets. Call right now 1-800-320-6280. That's 1-800-320-6280 and use promo code MEDVED. Or go to the web at MyPillow.com. The all-new My Slippers from MyPillow.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
According to the World Gold Council, while demand for gold is surging, 72% of people reply they lack the necessary know-how to do so. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta, owner of Advantage Gold, hands down the highest-rated gold dealer in the country. The reason? We lead with education. We've taught millions of investors how to buy gold safely and securely, and our in-depth gold guide explains everything you need to know. From what type of metals to consider, if an IRA or cash transaction is best, and how you can be certain that the gold you're buying is authentic, certified, and real. Call 800-900-8000 now and get our number one rated first-time gold buyer's kit. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the information you need to secure your future. Call 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000 today.
Jose works on a farm. Safety is important. His boss calls 811 to determine where it's okay to dig. This protects Jose from hitting an underground line and from serious injury. Because Jose can't tell exactly where or how deep the lines are, he doesn't dig until 811 tells him it's safe. The most important thing is that Jose works safe and goes home to his family. For more information, visit farmsafe811.org. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
Middle Eastern music for this special broadcast about the origins and the history of the seemingly endless Middle Eastern conflict between Israel and her Arab neighbors. We were talking before about the attempt by the Jews who had settled in the Turkish province of Palestine to help the British win the war. Because there was a general understanding that the dream of constructing a Jewish homeland, and at least part of the territory that Jews had already settled, had purchased, had developed, had built homes in, that it would be easier to realize that dream under the British, who generally had a more open attitude toward Jews and the whole idea of a Jewish homeland, than it would be under the Turks. And anyway, the British were clearly going to win the war in that part of the world. The Turkish army was not outstandingly noted for its effectiveness, and Jews participated. Jews who lived in the land of Israel participated in a Jewish legion, including a young idealist, fiery young idealist named David Ben-Gurion, who later became the first prime minister of the state of Israel, and they participated in the Zion Mule Corps and generally tried to help the British against the Turks. There were other reasons that the British were very much drawing closer to the Zionist movement and its goals. One of them involves this complicated sort of power politics that was going on toward the end of World War I. Now, I've got to give you a little bit of the perspective, because otherwise the whole point is lost. You may remember that one of England's allies in World War I, before the United States came aboard to help England and France were allied with Russia. But Russia was being torn apart by the revolution. And one of the things that the communists and most of the other revolutionaries wanted was for Russia to get out of the war. So one of the things that England was concerned about was, as much as possible, keeping public opinion in Russia on a pro-English, pro-war side. One of the groups in Russia, and it was a substantial part of the population, that was most revolutionary was the Jewish population in Russia. A lot of the communist leadership at that time was Jewish. So there was a feeling by His Majesty's government that in addition to helping to work with the Jews in that Turkish province of Palestine, they could actually help appeal to Jews in Russia by coming out on the side of the Zionist movement with its dreams of creating a Jewish homeland. And it took nearly a year of top-level negotiations involving a very urbane and distinguished British Jewish scientist named Chaim Weizmann and a number of his friends and colleagues before, in the midst of World War I, in November of 1917, a historic document was issued. It was actually issued in the form of a letter from A.J. Balfour to Lord Rothschild, who had been an influential supporter of the Zionist movement. It was called the Balfour Declaration, and it said, its big, important sentence that changed the whole course of world history was, His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object. Now, of course, the Zionists had wanted them to say not a national home for the Jewish people, but a Jewish state. They didn't say that in the Balfour Declaration. Nevertheless, the celebrations in Jewish communities around Europe at finally having like a formal endorsement from the British government in the middle of the war, the celebrations were extraordinary. There's a guy named Joseph Klausner who was in Odessa at the time, and he said there was a huge mass meeting to welcome the Balfour Declaration with 200,000 Jews following a motorcade of a Zionist leader named Ussishkin and his comrades. And, quote, the whole of Christian Odessa was astounded at the sight of the great Jewish procession, the like of which no Russian city had ever seen. There were other Zionists who understood that the Balfour Declaration might be important and certainly would increase immigration into Palestine, but it wasn't the end of the struggle. David Ben-Gurion, who was in America at the time that he heard about the Balfour Declaration, said, Britain has not given Palestine back to us. Even if the whole country were conquered by the British, it would not become ours through Great Britain giving her consent and other countries agreeing. Britain has made a magnificent gesture, Ben-Gurion wrote. She has recognized our existence as a nation and has acknowledged our right to the country. But only the Hebrew people can transform this right into tangible fact. Only they, with body and soul, with their strength and capital, must build their national home and bring about their national redemption. The one thing that no one realized at the time sufficiently was that the Jewish people were not the only people in the world who were basically being manipulated by the British. And we're manipulating back, too. I mean, there was a relationship of convenience between the British government in the midst of the war and the Zionist movement that was so eager for some cooperation from the British. There was also a relationship of convenience between the British and Arab aspirations. If you've ever seen one of the greatest movies ever made, and it really is, Lawrence of Arabia, you know what I'm talking about. Is T.E. Lawrence, at the same time that the British were making promises to the Jews who lived in Palestine, T.E. Lawrence and other English representatives in the Middle East were making promises to the Arabs. Because just as the British wanted the Jews to help them in battling the Turks, even more importantly, they wanted to mobilize the far greater population of Arabs throughout the Middle East, in Arabia and Egypt and everywhere else, to help throw out the Turks. Because it was very clear that if the Turkish Empire collapsed, that entire part of the world would come under the control of the British Empire. And here, what is important to keep in mind is you began to see the first stirrings, really encouraged by the British, of modern Arab nationalism. The idea that we as a people, Arab people, who had such a glorious past, have been subjugated by the Turks, who were Muslims, yes, but they weren't Arabs, and now we were going to come into our own, the British were our friends, they were going to help us come into our own, and all of a sudden you have promises to Jewish people, you have promises to Arab people, and clearly they are going to run into one another. The interesting thing is that during and immediately after World War I, there really were some statements from some of the Arab leaders in the Turkish province of Palestine before it passed over to the British at the end of World War I, that they were appreciative of all of the economic activity and the improved standard of living that had been brought about in Palestine because of the Jewish presence. But unfortunately, that goodwill didn't last. It soon collapsed in a horrible way and a particularly bloody way, long before the State of Israel was ever declared, long before the West Bank was ever occupied. The civil war that went on under mandatory Palestine, under the British mandate that was handed to them by the League of Nations in Palestine, that bloodshed was horrific and unfortunately prophetic. Tell you about it as we return on this special broadcast, Why They Fight.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
A judge has issued the first outright acquittal of a defendant charged in the January 6th attack. Following a two-day trial, New Mexico engineer Matthew Martin was acquitted Wednesday on four misdemeanor charges by a judge. Martin claimed that he thought police allowed him into an entrance near the Capitol Rotunda. The judge saying based on a video of the scene that assertion was at least plausible and prosecutors failed to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. New sanctions against Russia are taking aim at the Kremlin's financial sector and the country's elites. President Biden, without proof, saying the ongoing sanctions are wiping out the past 15 years of economic gains in Russia. Biden once again condemning the ongoing Russian invasion of Ukraine, calling it brutal and horrifying. You're listening to USA Radio News.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief with what's going on in the world. As we all know, global problems are having local consequences. Too many of them. And if the peanut butter really hits the fan, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Now's the time to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits will ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats government food lines hands down. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. You may have spent Thanksgiving carving up turkey. That's exactly what the League of Nations did in 1919, 1920, 1921, carving up turkey. Well, not the bird, but the country. Because the Ottoman Empire had collapsed. It was over after World War I. And its different provinces that it had administered in the Middle East went to some of the victorious powers. For instance, France got Syria and Lebanon. And England got a whole swath of territory, including Egypt under British supervision, and Palestine. They had a mandate under the League of Nations for the province called Palestine. And that mandate was much, much, much bigger than Israel is today, any way that you want to define Israel's borders. In fact, it was about three times bigger. But one of the things that happened is that when the League of Nations voted to assign this territory to England, after England had put out the Balfour Declaration saying His Majesty's government looks with favor on the establishment of a Jewish national home in Palestine, basically what you had is the whole League of Nations, which was the old UN, it was the old version of the UN, though without the U.S. ever participating, the American government had nothing to do with this, that when all of the League of Nations voted to approve handing this territory to England, they were all voting, so the Zionist movement believed, to endorse the idea of a Jewish national home. And this began to create great panic among Arab leaders throughout the Middle East, because they had seen the disappearance of Turkey and the collapse of Turkey as heralding a bright new era of Arab independence and of Arab rebuilding. But here, all of a sudden, they are having to deal with a Jewish presence in their midst, which they had never really taken seriously. But after the Balfour Declaration, Jewish immigrants started arriving, and started arriving in bigger numbers than ever before. The settlements got more serious than ever before. There had always been a Jewish majority in Jerusalem, all the way since 1840, but now that Jewish majority got bigger and bigger, and there was great concern. So under pressure from the Arab residents of Mandatory Palestine, what happened is that England chopped it up. It chopped up the British mandate. And this is very important to keep in mind, because the original area of Palestine that was supposed to look with favor upon the establishment of a Jewish national home included everything that is today Israel and everything that is today Jordan as well. And what the British did is they said, look, we're going to cut this right down the middle in the Jordan River. But it's not down the middle, because Jordan is much bigger in terms of land area than Israel, almost three times as large. And what they said is this area of Transjordan, the area that's east of the Jordan River, is going to be closed to Jewish settlement. In other words, no Jews will be allowed to settle there. This will be a pure Arab, pure Palestinian home. And that was an attempt by the British to try to placate the Arab sensibilities throughout Palestine. But it didn't work. And one of the reasons it didn't work is because there was increasing jealousy, resentment, and fear about Jews buying more and more land and building whole cities that had never existed before. Right near the old Arab city of Jaffa, this big new Jewish city of Tel Aviv was growing up and was soon larger than the old Arab city of Jaffa. And the Jews had more modern ways of farming. They seemed to be doing better, even though the standard of living was increasing and the Arab population was increasing even more dramatically than the Jewish population. There was tremendous resentment. It exploded into riots several times. The most serious riots came in 1929. They had seen the Jewish population double. Then in 1929, there were rumors that were spread that the Jews were planning to build a new temple on the Temple Mount. They were planning to get rid of the Muslim mosques up there. Does that sound familiar? Well, it wasn't true, but a group of Arabs then disrupted. Jews were praying at the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall, which forms the only remaining part of the old temple on the Temple Mount. And that hostility spilled out all across the areas of Jewish settlement. By the time it was over, virtually the entire Jewish population of Hebron had been killed or fled, and all 133 Jews were killed, 399 wounded, in what really were pogroms, sporadic attacks by Arab bands, which the British did nothing to prevent, which encouraged the idea among Jews that they needed to defend themselves, and made the future battles far more serious, as you will see.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. Based on 30 hours of intimate interviews, the superb new PBS documentary, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in his own words, allows the Supreme Court Justice to tell his remarkable story just as he had narrated to family members or close friends. His recollections come alive through expertly edited still photos and film footage showing his rise from desperate poverty in the segregated South to appointment to the nation's highest court. His confirmation process, nearly derailed by last-minute clearly dubious charges by one-time aide Anita Hill, makes for riveting viewing, highlighting a much younger Joe Biden's bumbling role as chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. The two-hour film is rated PG-13 for some of the salacious aspects of Anita Hill's testimony, but viewers of all ages will feel inspired by the heartfelt patriotism and deep religious faith that allow Justice Thomas to transcend every obstacle. Created Equal, a masterful piece of work, clearly counts among the year's best films. I'm Michael Medved.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, cutting through some of the propaganda and controversy and confusion concerning the history, the origins of the Arab-Israeli struggle. Talking about what happened once England took over the land of Israel, the territory of Palestine, and first off split off the biggest part of that territory of Palestine and said no Jews are allowed to settle there. And that became the nation of Jordan. It was originally called Transjordan, the part of Palestine that was east of the Jordan River. But yet there was still enough conflict, enough resentment, enough difficulty between Arabs and Jews in what was left of Mandatory Palestine to cause great concern to the British, who were supposed to be keeping the peace and running the place, and for everybody else. It's very important to understand that part of what happened here was just the different trajectories of the histories of two ancient people. For a lot of the Jews who found themselves in the land of Israel, and for the first time in 2,000 years having really purposeful, aggressive settlement of the land of Israel, there was a feeling of almost instant liberation. People pouring in from places like Russia and Poland, where there had been tremendous oppression, where people had had very little ability to sort of express their creative instincts, and all of a sudden, here they are, living in their own land, setting up their own communities. Oh, for one thing, reviving their ancient language. In 1889, there was a Russian-born Jew named Eliezer ben Yehuda, who helped to start a committee to make sure that everybody, all of the Jewish people who had moved into the new land, would not speak Yiddish, which was the language of exile, the language of Europe, which was really a corrupted version of German, German with a Hebrew accent, but they would speak Hebrew. Hebrew had been kept alive as a language of prayer, as a language of the Bible, very much in the same way that Catholics had kept Latin alive. But people didn't speak Hebrew at this time. Eliezer ben Yehuda and his cohorts wanted people to speak it as an everyday language of shopkeepers and policemen and people who just toiled in the soil. And he created a new dictionary trying to modernize some Hebrew words, finding modern equivalents for Hebrew words. And soon there was a whole upsurge. And indeed, for people who were coming to the land of Israel from all around the world, learning Hebrew was one of the things that brought them together.
You're listening to a Best of the Michael Medved Show.
The pain was very bad, and since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and I was having a hard time walking, and the pain was very bad. And since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and the pain has gone away. I really am walking pain-free. So I just want to recommend this to anyone who has severe pain or any type of pain. It is really a miracle product.
Try Relief Factor. It has worked wonderfully for literally hundreds of thousands, and certainly for me. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, and order your own quick start. Nothing to lose but your pain. The whole world to gain. MichaelMedved.com. Click on the banner for Relief Factor or call 833-654-PAIN. Relief Factor. Don't you get tired of commercials screaming at you to buy gold right now with inflated promises on future values? In an unregulated industry, you need honest, real experts to give you solid advice to protect your wealth and give you top picks, too, on the best coins and bullion based on real-time data and historical trends. For example, as environmental policy becomes a hot topic, one precious metal that's been significantly undervalued for years is potentially set to surge. Nick Rovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has long recommended this precious metal. Up to 600,000 ounces of this rare metal will be needed by 2030 to produce green hydrogen. Nick is doubling down on this pick, and you should, too. Call Nick to find out more. Now, I've been friends with Nick for several years, and he's my go-to guy when it comes to coins and bullion. I trust him. You can, too. Call Nick at 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last two decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendivite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The seven herbs in Extendivite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendivite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendivite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Listening to a best of the Michael Medved show.
It's an everyday language of shopkeepers and policemen and people who just toiled in the soil. And he created a new dictionary trying to modernize some Hebrew words, finding modern equivalents for Hebrew words. And soon there was a whole upsurge. And indeed, for people who were coming to the land of Israel from all around the world, learning Hebrew was one of the things that brought them together. There's also another factor, which is, of course, the Jews who helped to settle in Palestine were receiving support from other Jews around the world. The Zionist dream originally, as Theodor Herzl described it, was that all Jews in the world would come to settle in Israel and realize that there was no future in exile. That in exile you were either going to be persecuted or you were going to assimilate or stop being Jewish. You had to come to Israel. By this time, however, it was very clear that there were lots of people who wanted to see Israel built up who weren't ready to move themselves. And it led David Ben-Gurion, and one of the leaders of the Zionist movement, to make the somewhat humorous observation that a Zionist is a man who asks for money from another man in order to send a third man to go and live in Israel. And there was a sense that there were people, including very poor people and very rich people, who sent money and support to try to build up a Jewish homeland in the land of Israel. Now, the Palestinians, the Arabs who lived in that area, many of whom had arrived, remember, at the same time the Jews arrived, because the Palestinian population was growing even more quickly, not just by birth rate, but by people moving in from Syria and Iraq and Egypt and what was then Jordan, moving in at the same time. They didn't have people from abroad paying them money. They didn't have a new national language. They didn't have this sense of a messianic mission. And they began to feel more and more fearful and resentful of the Jews in their midst. And all of this came to a head when the British, seeing the tensions between the two populations, between World War I and World War II, convened a commission. It was called the Peel Commission, to try to decide what should be done, because it became increasingly obvious that these two peoples were not getting along. Part of the teaching was that Islam had always held that, yes, there were certain rights for Christians and for Jews in Islamic society, but clearly those rites were supposed to place the Christians and Jews secondarily to the Muslims. The Muslims were supposed to be in charge. If you had a situation where Jews or Christians were doing better than Muslims, well, that was unnatural, and it had to be resisted. And interestingly, a lot of the Muslims began to think of the Jews as somehow allied with the Crusaders, with the Christians. They had gone through a situation, way back in the 11th century, where the Christians had tried to regain the Holy Land, and they'd had several hundred years of struggle before the Christians were finally thrown out. Ironically, those Christian Crusaders had also been very anti-Jewish and had actually butchered and massacred many Jews. But now the Arabs in Palestine were identifying the Jews as sort of being front people for the Crusaders, keeping them down, sort of betraying them. And when the Peel Commission, this British commission, came up with a solution to the problem, it was accepted by the British, it was accepted by the Jews, but it was violently rejected by the Arabs. The solution the Peel Commission suggested was partition, was dividing what was left of the land of Palestine, giving a small part of it to be a new Jewish state, a much larger part to be an Arab state in Palestine, and then also a fairly big part to be Jerusalem and a Jerusalem corridor that would, of course, remain British because it was the only way to safeguard the various holy places. The Jews reluctantly accepted this idea of partition, even though they were restricted to the lands that they had settled already, and they had very little extra land under the partition plan. Still, at least it would be giving them their own state. But the Arabs not only rejected it, they launched what was in effect a civil war. All kinds of battles, attacking Jewish settlements, attacking Jewish civilians, and the fact that these attacks took place should give a very different perspective to those people who say today that the reason for Palestinian hostility has been the seizure and expulsion and the refugee crisis. There was no refugee crisis here, but there was profound hostility. Tell you what that's all about coming back.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. A new study of the aging process demolishes one of the chief leftist claims about healthcare, that government control can eliminate inequality. The research conducted by Harvard and University College London looked at more than 25,000 people over 50 in the U.S. and the U.K. In both countries, subjects with higher net worth enjoyed an identical advantage of 8 to 9 disability-free years compared to those with little or no personal wealth. The results shocked experts who expected that Britain's highly touted government-funded National Health Service would produce more equal outcomes than the United States. Data strongly suggests the real difference in health and longevity reflect common patterns in both countries, where the poor are far more likely to smoke, to consume unhealthy diets, to abuse drugs and alcohol, and shun regular exercise. In both America and Britain, health depends less on government programs than on lifestyle choices we can control. I'm Michael Medved.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show called Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. And if you want a full tape of this special broadcast or any of our other history shows, all of our other history shows are about American history, you can find information about that at our website, michaelmedved.com, M-E-D-V-E-D, or call Tree Farm Communications at 1-800-468-0464. We were speaking about the Peel Commission, this commission that had been convened by the British to try to bring some order and some peace to their territory of mandatory power. Palestine. They had a Palestine mandate. They had given a big chunk of that over to make this new nation of Jordan, in which no Jewish settlement was permitted. In the remainder of Palestine, the Peel Commission suggested that about 20% of the remaining land be made to create a Jewish enclave. This seemed very, very small to the Zionist leaders, but they were busy negotiating with the British about accepting it. But the Arabs totally rejected it, because even in just 20% of the land, it still would have created a situation where some Muslims were living under Jewish domination. That was totally unacceptable to the big leader of Palestinian Arabs at the time, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, the leading religious authority and political authority among Palestinians. His name was Haj Amin el-Husseini, and he was very much attracted to the ideas of one Adolf Hitler. In fact, in the middle of World War II, he went to Berlin, he met with Hitler, he tried to rouse Arab support for Hitler, because he believed that Hitler was absolutely right about the Jews everywhere, including the Jews in Palestine, representing a threat to the whole world. But open warfare broke out between Jews and Arabs. The Jews had done much better at organizing their paramilitary organizations, trying to defend themselves, and even taking the battle against the Palestinians at some point. It was still not possible for Jews to seize land, but they continued trying to buy land and develop it. And that was scary enough. Interestingly, the Peel Commission said the main problem with the shortage of land was not the Jewish purchase. But they said in 1937, the shortfall of land is, quote, due less to the amount of land acquired by Jews than to the increase in the Arab population. Because Arabs had been moving in with unrestricted immigration. The British responded to Arab riots often by limiting Jewish immigration, even as the Holocaust was coming on, as Hitler was persecuting his own people in Germany and people wanted to come to the land of Israel. British limits on immigration made that more and more difficult. But soon the explosion of World War II and the blood and flame of the Holocaust changed everything, leading in less than 10 years to the creation of a new state with a new problem, a refugee problem that later became the very center of what we are discussing, the Arab-Israeli struggle, why they fight, on this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show in the greatest nation on God's green earth.
You're listening to a best of the Michael Medved Show. For complete show archives, go to michaelmedved.com and consider becoming a Medhead. Use the promo code SPRING40 for some special discounts. When you become a premium subscriber, you get access to hundreds of Michael's commentaries, movie reviews, exclusive podcasts, and of course our commercial-free radio show going back years and years. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead banner today.
Have you heard about vine-to-bar chocolate? It's the winemaker's chocolate, the world's first chocolate made with well-vined Chardonnay marc from the beautiful coastal vineyards of North America. Gently pressed grapes are harvested after juicing, dried and finely milled, and carefully blended into the finest dark chocolate. The Chardonnay marc contains highly beneficial grape nutrients, flavanols, and has a natural sweetness that flavors the luscious dark chocolate. Mouthwatering, flavorful, delectable dark chocolate goodness with Chardonnay sweetness and beneficial nutrients. And it's alcohol free too. It's Vine to Bar Chocolate. Order some today at vinetobar.com. That's VINETOBAR.com. Cold shipped to your door, it's Vine to Bar. Vine to Bar Chocolate. Visit us at vinetobar.com.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects, big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.